Hello, you're listening to the Swiss Info programme for March the 7th. I'm Jo Fay. Floating on a sheet of ice for 72 hours in a failed attempt to cross the Arctic would be too much for most people to bear. But it didn't put Thomas Ulrich off trying to be the first person to make it solo, on foot, from Siberia to Canada via the North Pole. In fact, it's made him want it even more, and he's training for a rerun.
This project became a kind of a life dream for me, you know. It's not one day I cannot think about it, so it's much deeper.
Ulrich's expedition is a small Swiss operation with big goals. Everything from the food he'll eat to the sledges on which he'll pull his supplies along have been designed and developed by him.
The design is quite different to the other ones, and definitely the material as well, because usually sledges are always made out of carbon and Kevlar.
And it all comes out of the Nerve Centre, a warehouse and office in Interlaken.
I would say for me the most special place I have been is definitely the Arctic. That's why I'm so addicted to it now.
Ulrich will travel 2,000 kilometres in low temperatures of minus 45 degrees Celsius, pulling two sledges of gear and supplies weighing 180 kilograms. He's an adventurer, an explorer.
My passion for expeditions and adventure came as a kid, you know. Already my parents, they tell me that I was always the highest up in the trees when I was a small boy. So it's kind of in me since I'm born, I think, you know. So I was always searching for challenges. I never had a normal job, you can say. I always had different jobs as a mountain guide. I worked with helicopters, and as a photographer, I searched for challenges there.
It was when he started to run a photography agency and began earning a living as a photographer that his passion for mountain adventures moved to centre stage. In 2003, he and his friend Birger Ausland crossed the southern Patagonia ice shelf unaided. He's also followed in the footsteps of the Norwegian polar explorer Fridtjof Nansen to Franz Josef Land. His first solo attempt across the Arctic was in 2006. But after being dropped off by helicopter on the ice to start his journey, a strong storm blew up, meaning he couldn't set off.
A few things happened in the planning, and also by when we flew to the start point, the conditions were not good. We were stopped by a big storm, and so I had to wait for 1 week alone on the coast of Siberia because I could not hold the helicopters longer.
After months of planning and training, it was a major blow. But more than that, while he was waiting to be picked up, Ulrich had a lot of time for reflection. He wasn't even sure he would make it back at all.
It was not just failing and going home. I had to fight for my life out there, and I was close to death. And this project became a kind of a life dream for me, you know. It's not one day I cannot think about it. So it's much deeper. Even because of the failing, I think it's much deeper.
Hans Ambuhl is the behind-the-scenes side of the expedition. He fundraises before the start to get sponsorship to pay for the trip. The last one cost around 500,000 euros. But he's also the key person in case of emergency, and he didn't expect it to come so soon in the first attempt.
If Thomas faces an emergency situation, I have the task to start the plan. We have an emergency exit plan for every expedition. Sometimes we have to deposit money somewhere. If Thomas gets into an emergency situation, of course I have to coordinate whatever is possible.
He told me how he felt when he found out that plan had to be kick-started into action.
Horrible, of course, when things go wrong and you know it's a friend. You also know the only thing you can do to help him is do your job and do whatever is necessary to get him out. Actually, if he's in a emergency situation, there is not too much time to think. It's the time to act.
Nonetheless, Ambuhl put the rescue plan into full swing and talked to Thomas on a satellite phone to try and reassure him.
I remember a couple telephone calls when Thomas was on the ice and he was actually pretty sure that he would die. That was, of course, this was really touching, and I also felt helpless, of course.
It was a testing time for everyone involved, but Thomas survived. He returned home, defeated, discouraged, but alive. Mm-hmm. Ulrich feels that he compromised on a critical point in his failed attempt at the challenge because of money restrictions. He sent back the helicopter, which dropped him at his starting point, before ensuring he could set off and progress through one of the trickiest parts of the journey. And so he decided to do a trial run. In April 2015, Ulrich will take a group of 8 people on a 100-kilometre expedition to the North Pole, acting as their guide. Once they reach this point, he'll carry on for 35 to 40 days to the coast of Canada, alone and on foot, to complete half of the expedition that he'll then take on in its entirety in 2016. This time he wants to make sure he sets off at the right moment, despite already having to push back his attempt by 1 year, as it's been hard to get the sponsorship in place. That independence he wants comes at a price. There are 2 other key practical aspects to the expedition: tailor-made equipment that Ulrich has had a personal hand in developing, and an inescapable commitment to train hard and get in shape. Ulrich has designed his own sledge, which allows him to lug his supplies over huge lumps of ice and pull them through the water. Made from polythene, it looks a lot like a smooth canoe.
So there is my new developed sledge.
So how does this work? Do you get a basic form that you adjust to make it your own, or do you make it entirely from scratch to how you want it?
I mean, it's experiences from other expeditions, from other sledges I pulled by myself, but the design is quite different to the other ones, and definitely the material as well. It's almost not possible to destroy, which is very important as well.
He was helped by the Biel University of Applied Sciences and a German kayak producer. This time his technique is slightly different from his 2006 attempt.
I use 2 sledges on my expedition now, on my project. It's easier to handle 2 sledges than 1 big one, which is very heavy. The first sledge helps the second one going over the rough ice, for example, so it's easier to handle. It's more efficient with 2 sledges.
Packing the right gear and food is of the utmost importance. Ulrich and his team create small sausage-shaped plastic pouches that contain the equivalent to a meal. He showed me some of the leftover packets from 2006 that he's kept in his storeroom.
It's all made of my team and myself, and so you have marks on, so you know what it is. At the beginning of the expedition, I eat less calories, because before I start an expedition, I gain a little of body fat. So at the beginning of the expedition, I use my body fat, so I need less calories. But at the end of the expedition, the rations get much higher, up to 6,500 calories a day.
His shopping list for his time on the ice sounds as if it would feed an entire army.
In these 100 days, I eat almost 20 kilos of cereal.
That's a lot.
Of oat, yeah. Or I use 14 litres olive oil, 9 kilos butter, 6 kilos sugar, 17 kilos chocolate, 11 kilos mashed potatoes. So that's quite a lot.
And when you come home, do you feel like you can never face eating porridge or mashed potatoes ever again?
No problem with that kind of food, really. I mean, I use also sometimes on climbing expedition, so I use other fridge-dried food. And I tried a few times to eat that when I'm home in civilization, but I couldn't. But this food is perfect. You have everything you need.
Ulrich eats 200 grams of milk chocolate per day, taking it out of its normal packaging before he sets off and putting it in a plastic bag. The next day, he uses that bag as a vapour barrier on his feet. Aside from managing his diet and making sure he eats enough, he also has to be prepared in case of unexpected company while he's inside his tent at night.
I build kind of a fence around my camp. I have 4 to 6 of those carbon sticks. I mount some explosives, and then there is a rope all around, and if a polar bear walks in, he pulls out that pin, and some fire, some noise, 1 or 2 of them go off, and usually he runs away, and usually we wake up and we can go out and scare him off, pepper spray with flares, when he curiously comes back again.
So you would end up pepper spraying a polar bear in the eyes? Is that something that happens?
Yeah. When the wind comes from the right direction, we use pepper spray. This is the most efficient, actually, you can say. He doesn't like it at all.
And how big is a polar bear in comparison to you?
I mean, if he stands up, he is 3 meters.
There's also a chance Ulrich will come across polar bears when he's out on the ice during the day. He keeps a key item close to him at all times.
This is a harness I developed also. There is my weapon ready on my body. It doesn't make sense if it is deep down in the sledge. If a polar bear attacks me, I need to be ready right away. So it's also secure, so you don't lose it. That's very important. That's not funny if you lose your weapon out there and there are polar bears around you.
Training is key, and Ulrich lives in the right place to get in shape. He showed me where he goes for some outdoor practice. We drove up into the mountains above where he lives.
Oh,
there's
the snow.
Yeah, we'd even have snow, yeah?
High up above Interlaken, he puts on his harness with 2 large car tyres attached by rope behind him. He then proceeds to hike at speed straight up the mountainside as I take off after him.
On training like that, I have also a backpack with me, filled up with 30 kilos of Swiss telephone books.
Really?
Yes.
So how often do you do the training with tyres like this in the lead up to the trip?
3 months before I start my expedition, like 2-3 times a week.
And then when you get very close to the expedition, do you step up how much training you're doing?
Every day, 2 times a day. That's usually my training session.
And how much do these tyres weigh, do you know?
They don't weigh actually that much. It's not the weight you're pulling. It's more like when you are in area like that and it's bumpy and you always get stuck. That's exactly what happened in the Arctic in the ice. And that trains your body for the work you have to accept out there. If you don't do that, you will have problems with your back and with your legs. So that's quite good training for simulating the ice.
And is it something you just came up with on your own, or do you know that if other people
actually,
do that?
Cross-country skiers even do that, but also all the expeditions, and you need to check out if that is something, and it worked out well, so I'm doing it as well.
All right, let's carry on.
So after all the money, time, and the chance that it might not work out at all, why does he still want to do it?
Being in the Arctic is magic for me, you know, because it's endless space. You're just traveling on frozen water, you can say, and it's every day changing. People think it's every day the same out there, but it's totally different. The conditions of the ice, the conditions of the light, the weather, wind, open water, even animals close to the coast. You can see seals, whales, polar bears. It's very magic, and I think it's magic because it's the most remote place on Earth still, you know. Every corner on the world is explored, is on maps, but Arctic Ocean is not, because it's just frozen water. It's just blue on a map.
The Swiss-styled adventurer and his dream of Arctic exploration. You can read more about his trip in April online at swissinfo.ch. Thanks to technician Jakob Stoller. This is the Swiss Info programme. I'm Jo Faye.